This podcast was recorded Thursday, December 2nd at 10:35 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this.
Yeah, like we'll all be able to nail the pronunciation of the new COVID variant.
Is it Omicron, Omicron, Omnicron? That's what President Biden called it.
Just say, oh my God. That's how I remembered it. Oh my God. Anyway, let's talk politics. This is Snolly Goster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and those shrewd politicians or snollygosters who very soon may not be able to blame the activist judges for controversial laws. I'm Steve Brown.
Yes, soon votes to ban abortion could be more than symbolic. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up on the podcast, what will Governor DeWine do if the Omicron variant is really bad?
But first, the fates of abortion laws in Ohio and around the country are in the hands of 9 U.S. Supreme Court justices. Justices this week heard arguments in a case that challenges Mississippi's abortion law that bans the procedure after 15 weeks. It's always difficult to predict a Supreme Court decision based on the oral arguments, but the consensus at this point seems to be that the court will uphold the Mississippi law and might even overturn Roe versus Wade altogether.
Yeah, here's how it played out. The 3 liberal justices, Breyer, Kagan, and Sotomayor, firmly stood behind Roe. The 2 longest-serving conservative justices, Alito and Thomas, firmly stood against Roe. Now, the newest justices, conservatives Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Barrett, and the Chief Justice, Roberts, John Roberts, are the relatively unknowns. They all seem to support the Mississippi ban, which would shorten the time a woman has to have an abortion. But they also cast doubt on the Roe decision as a whole.
So the conventional wisdom is, and conventional wisdom not always wise, right? The conventional wisdom is that the court looks like it will at least restrict abortion further and, again, may very well overturn Roe versus Wade altogether.
Of course, this case will affect people outside of Mississippi. It will affect us here in Ohio, as the supermajority of our state legislature is very opposed to abortion rights. And we have a law right now on the books that would ban abortion at the detection of fetal cardiac activity. That so-called heartbeat law is on hold, but would presumably take effect if the court overturns Roe.
Joining us now to discuss the arguments and what the looming decision might mean for Ohio is Audra Heinrichs. She's a freelance reporter. She's written about Ohio's abortion lawmaking for The Washington Post and The Guardian, and she is a graduate of Ohio State University. Audra, welcome to Snolly Goster.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I so appreciate it.
So do you read the court's arguments the way that most court watchers do, that they seem to be leaning toward being against Roe?
Right. You know, for this particular case, I did. Technically, I'm not a breaking news reporter. So more often than not, I tend to parse through them days after they've taken place as I write more long form features. So really, my job is to make sense of them and then make them make sense to people who don't have the luxury of time or energy to sift through everything. And that comes with a little bit of time and distance, obviously. So if my beat were breaking news or court cases, then yes, that's a different story. But again, for this particular case, because I have covered it in the past, I did read them.
Yeah, it's it was a very thoughtful debate and deliberation and argument. I was really impressed by the questions that the justices asked and that the answer that lawyers on both sides gave. It really is a terrific lesson in the Supreme Court and how it operates. And unfortunately, while we heard the audio live, we didn't see it live. Which,
God forbid.
One of my pet peeves is to get cameras in there. But it really just, it's an incredibly difficult decision. And these justices are in one of them said that basically a no-win. They're going to make somebody mad.
Oh, sure.
And we'll see what happens. But let's start with the what-ifs, because that's where we are now. So
sure.
The first what-if, what if the court upholds the Mississippi law and moves the time frame to obtain a legal abortion from viability, which is about 23 weeks right now, up to that 15 weeks? What could happen in states like Ohio and other states around the country?
Well, as you said yesterday, it did seem likely that the court will uphold the ban in Mississippi, given the court's 6-member conservative majority seemed divided about whether to stop at 15 weeks for now, at least, or whether to overrule Roe entirely. So I, you know, it's the Roe piece is very much still hanging in the balance. But in terms of Mississippi, you know, if the 15-week viability portion obviously were upheld, I think we'd obviously then see a major surge of legislation outlawing abortion at 15 weeks across the country in states of real precarity, obviously Ohio being one of them. Any state with a trigger law in place or one that's been introduced will likely then quickly introduce the 15-week ban. And these states that we can expect would be Arkansas, Idaho, Kentucky, Missouri, North Dakota, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, Utah and Oklahoma, I think, are sort of the ones at the forefront of that.
What would happen if the court says viability is not the legal measurement for legal abortion, but does not set a limit?
Well, there are really three scenarios with respect to the outcome of this ruling, right? I mean, SCOTUS could conclude that the states can completely ban abortions. Two, the states can restrict abortions before a fetus is viable, which would obviously allow for more restrictive abortion laws than the one currently permitted. Or three, they could decide that abortion laws could stay about the same as they are now, which is obviously the most unlikely of scenarios. If it doesn't give an exact limit on viability, I think it would throw things kind of into chaos, even more so than it already is. It would obviously then be determined on a state-by-state basis, which would give historically conservative states kind of free rein. So again, states like Alabama, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Utah, who have all previously argued that life begins at conception, might be the first to outlaw abortion that way.
Yeah, it really, I mean, that's what abortion opponents have been advocating, is this should be left up to the states, to the local government, even to Congress. Congress could pass an amendment to the Constitution that would settle this. That's unlikely at this point, but, you know, that's the whole point here. Should the court be involved in regulating this? And how do you balance the rights of a fetus, an unborn child, right, as abortion opponents call it, and the rights of a woman to decide what to do with her own life and her own body? It's an incredibly difficult decision, and we won't see it until June or July. And again, we caution that, you know, we have seen many a Supreme Court ruling that goes against the conventional wisdom after the oral arguments are presented,
and goes against precedent. They're not tied to precedent as much as they used to be.
No, and throughout history, the court has not been really tied to precedent. Plessy versus Ferguson was a terrible precedent, and they overturned it. So,
oh yeah, I mean, the worst example is Dred Scott. I mean, there are cases where the court abandons precedent altogether. Sure, that does happen.
Yeah, you wrote about how local communities are passing abortion bans. The Mason City Council declared the city a sanctuary for the unborn. It was a close vote, 4-3, but this goes all the way down to the local level. Was this Supreme Court ruling, could it affect like cities and counties?
That's a great question. You know, either way, despite whatever the outcome is here, I think it's safe to say that these local bans are going to continue. Whether Roe is overturned, the people behind these local bans are going to remain empowered. It's really just a matter of how empowered, right? In the event Roe is overturned, the states with trigger laws outlawing abortion will follow suit, so the job is effectively done in those places. But the number of states who don't have trigger laws in place are obviously going to be still ripe for the picking, if not even more so following the outcome. So my point is, what happens here isn't going to stop the groups and individuals from doing what they've proven to be good at, and that is identifying communities that are conservative, church-driven, and heavily influenced by Trumpism, and infiltrating those communities. The main, you know, sort of person that I wrote about in the Guardian piece about this, Mark Lee Dixon, who started Sanctuary Cities for the Unborn, has been at this for years and has connections across the country. Since 2019 alone, and during a pandemic, he's effectively established 42 cities as sanctuaries for the unborn and outlawed abortion within those city limits simply by introducing tailor-made ordinances to city council members and local officials. So whatever happens here is most likely going to empower these local bans all the more.
You know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease, right? The anti-abortion crowd is generally much more loud when it comes to this issue because they're on the offense. They're trying to change the laws that exist right now. This could put the power of this issue, one might say the burden of this issue, in the hands of lawmakers. Most Americans support Roe versus Wade. Now lawmakers could have to cast meaningful votes to overturn it. In some other states, that will not be a problem. In other states, swing states like Ohio, it will be a problem, at least for a lot of voters. It'll put lawmakers in a tough spot politically.
Right. Well, first of all, yeah, I mean, 60% of Americans say Roe should be upheld, according to a poll that was conducted literally last month, weeks ago. But bringing this back to Ohio, the majority of the Ohio State House is Republican and have co-sponsored or supported bills that restrict abortion. So in talking to people, I've really learned that there's already a real frustration in places like Ohio where organizers and activists have tried to instill a real sense of urgency in Democratic lawmakers and feel like it's not being heard.
We'll have to see how this works. Thanks to freelance reporter Audra Heinrichs for joining us here on Snollygoster.
Thank you so much again. I so appreciate it.
Thanks, Audra. We'll be right back.
On All Sides with Ann Fisher, we cover the topics that affect life in Central Ohio, from immigration to the economy to the continuing opioid crisis.
But the reality is, if you don't save someone who's overdosed, they have no opportunity to recover.
Hear thoughtful, in-depth conversations about the issues that matter now. Subscribe to the All Sides with Ann Fisher podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media. Just to put a button on our conversation about the situation with the abortion politics, it really will fall back on lawmakers now, which it might resolve this issue once and for all. It might take decades, but it might resolve this issue once and for all, because now lawmakers, if the court overturns Roe and sends it back to the states, mm-hmm. the immediate occurrence is that states like Alabama, conservative states, maybe even Ohio, are going to ban abortion completely. Texas is going to ban abortion completely because that's where they are right now. But voters support Roe, 60%, as we heard, 60% support Roe. So politicians are now going to, right now what happens is Republican politicians are able to vote for bans and then blame the Supreme Court if they can't enact them. So that appeases their base, the abortion opponents that they who vote for them. You don't have to worry about the abortion rights supporters who kind of ignore this right now because they have the right. But down the road, you're going to see lawmakers have to vote on this, going to have to compromise, and you're going to see voter-initiated statutes. This will be on the ballot, and I would guess 30 out of the 50 states within 10 years. If they overturn Roe, this will be on the ballot, similar to the way gay marriage was on the ballot and other controversial issues will be on the ballot. And the voters will decide this, and perhaps then this issue will be settled.
Yeah, until then, it will be influential in statewide races, right? Like a governor like Governor Mike DeWine, who's trying to poach some moderate Democrats who are presumably pro-choice and for abortion rights. Yeah, it'll be a consequential issue there. It will be a consequential issue also if we get gerrymandering out of the Ohio legislature. On a legislative level, until then, it's really, honestly, kind of a non-factor because these districts are so gerrymandered that, honestly, this is kind of a creation of gerrymandering. This I don't want to say extremism, but this type of hardline politics to the right in Ohio. Ohio's not that hardline. A slight majority of Ohioans support Roe v. Wade, mm-hmm. but we have trigger laws and such because of gerrymandering, because we have a super majority of Republicans in the legislature.
And look what happened in Mason. They voted to basically ban abortion in their community. And the election after they voted, Mason voters chose not to reelect the members who supported the abortion ban. They took a meaningful vote on abortion. Mm-hmm. The abortion rights supporters rallied, campaigned against them, found other candidates, and voted them out. So that's
politics at work.
That's what the future holds if the court overturns Roe and or severely restricts Roe. It will be a fight. Wherever you stand on this issue, the issue will fall back to politics and not the courts, which frankly could eventually, it will be painful for folks in the short term. Women who want abortions in states that it's banned, it will be tremendously painful on them. The burden will be on them. But this could get resolved in the long term.
Everyone loves the backup quarterback until the backup quarterback has to play.
Yeah.
Then sometimes he sucks. Either way, let's turn now to another heavily controversial issue, COVID-19 in Ohio. Wednesday this week brought one of Ohio's largest single-day coronavirus case totals in nearly a year. State health officials reported more than 8,900 cases outside of one day in September. That was the largest single-day total since last December. And we still don't know if the Omicron variant is in Ohio yet.
Yeah, no cases reported of the Omicron variant, but we have to assume it's at least on its way. As we record this, President Biden is set to announce his strategy to fight the new variant, but it looks like his plan will focus mainly on increased testing. He's going to require insurance companies to cover the cost of the home COVID tests. And he's going to require international travelers test negative before entering the United States.
Here in Ohio, Governor Mike DeWine says he is monitoring the situation. And as he has for the past several months, he is continuing to urge people to get vaccinated, get their booster shot, and to wear masks in indoor public settings.
Yeah, according to the New York Times analysis of health data, Ohio ranks 10th in the country in per capita spread over the past 2 weeks. That's not good.
That's not good.
53% of Ohio's population is fully vaccinated, which
is not really good either than
the national average. Not good. Ohio ranks 34th out of 50 states in terms of vaccination. Again, not good.
At least we're not last.
Yeah.
I know. Not good. Not a good situation. Obviously, no appetite for lockdowns at this point. Governor Mike DeWine signed a bill this week that would make it even harder to have lockdowns. The state could not shut down small businesses if they can't shut down large businesses of the same type. And that's obviously because of criticism early in the pandemic when the state shut small mom-and-pop stores, often had to close down when Walmart and Target and stores that were selling the same goods were able to stay open because they also sold food.
Yeah. The classic example is the small little dress shop had to shut down, but you could go to Target or Walmart and buy the dress because they sold toothpaste.
Yeah.
And it just didn't make any sense. They could have roped off those areas and just keep it to the essentials. Food, underwear, plumbing supplies. They could have done that, but they didn't.
Plumbing
supplies.
You could go outside.
What?
Plumbing supplies aren't necessary.
No, yeah, they are.
I'm kidding.
The running water is an essential task.
What running water is an essential, yes.
Yeah. Mulch, not so much.
No.
Grass seed, not so much.
Not the spools of fabric at Hobby Lobby?
I don't think people were making their own clothes.
No, some people might have been making masks, but
that's true. They were making masks. Give them credit there.
Yeah, they were. Anyway, city mask mandates remain in place, just like Columbus's mask mandate remains in place. Lawmakers still considering bans on vaccine mandates, that bill that we thought went away, that Bob Kupp said we're moving on. We're moving on in a circle because he's right back where he was.
Every time they bring that banning vaccine mandates bill up for a debate, something bad happens with COVID. I forget what the last one was, but it's up again this week, and we have a variant that's blooming around the world. It just, their timing is impeccable.
Anyway, go legislature. Moving on now to our Snollygoster of the Week award, the award to the shrewdest politician or political move of the past 7 days. This week it goes to, well, we don't even really know who it goes to.
Yes, we're not quite sure who this is. It goes to the Ohio Conservative Restoration Project. It sounds like they should be restoring a wetland. But anyway, the Ohio Conservative Restoration Project. But as for who is behind this project, your guess is as good as ours.
It's a so-called dark money group formed in Delaware, the state, not the Ohio city or county. And it is attacking Jim Renacci, the Republican who is challenging Governor Mike DeWine.
So it's a good guess that it's not Jim Renacci who is behind it. Here are some of the highlights or lowlights from the group's website. It says Renacci failed as mayor of Wadsworth. He failed as a congressman. They call him an out-of-touch politician who lives in a pricey development, very unusual for a Republican. And he has two homes in Florida. And the worst insult of all, the group says Renacci did not support President Trump in the 2016 campaign.
You can't see this on audio, but I'm grabbing my pearls right now.
Yes.
Didn't vote.
Those are fighting words there.
And the group has kind words for Governor DeWine. Shocking.
Kind words.
It thanks DeWine for awarding millions of dollars in clean water grants, and it praises DeWine for sending Ohio National Guard troops to the U.S.-Mexico border. It kind of praises DeWine for fighting President Biden's vaccine mandates, which DeWine really is not. It's more Attorney General Dave Yost. But yes. Same thing, I guess.
Yeah, I guess friends, company. They're in the same company anyway. So it would appear that at least supporters of Mike DeWine are behind this group, which would indicate they see Renacci as a legitimate challenge in next year's Republican primary.
He is a legitimate challenger.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens, but he is a legitimate challenger. So anyway, so the Ohio Conservative Restoration Project, whoever you are, you are our Snollygoster of the week. If you have a suggestion for next week, you can email it to us at snollygoster.org. You can also leave us a good review on iTunes, and as always, just tell your friends about us. For our audio producer, Eric French, and our web producer, Michael DeBonis, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.